About a month and a half ago, I was talking with a friend, and he told me that he thought this was our year. We were talking about the Nationals, and when he said this, we were still very deeply in the fight for the wild card game, just to get in it. He said he thought it was our year that we could beat the Brewers in the wild card game, and then that would give us the extra oomph that we needed to beat the Dodgers in the division series, a team that had won 106 games this year in the regular season. I don't know, was my response. I mean, I sure hope so, was the next thing out of my mouth. I hoped, but I had watched so many promising postseason runs go up in smoke in the first round, so I figured that the Nats would somehow find a way to disappoint me in the end. But my friend believed. He believed while I limped along during the postseason, always hoping, but wanting to temper that hope in case we lost. Which is the same way that Elijah describes the Israelites' choice to worship both God and Baal. So Ahab sent to all the Israelites and assembled the prophets at Mount Carmel. Elijah then came near to all the people and said, "How long will you go limping with two different opinions? If the Lord is God, then follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. How long will you go limping around with two different opinions?" Before they got to this point, Israel was running along just fine. Sure, they'd had their moments of human stupidity, and they had been slowed for a bit, but they were running the race with God at the helm. Then Ahab became king of Israel and married Jezebel, who by most accounts introduced him to Baal, another god who specialized in storms, rain, dew, and fertility. An enticing god to lean on in a dusty desert community. Not long after they're married, Ahab built a temple for Baal in Samaria and erected an altar to Baal in the Jewish temple. Baal becomes the rock that the Israelites step on mid-run, the thing that they turn to when they doubt God's ability to give them what they need, turning their ankle just enough that they begin limping along, worshiping both God and Baal. Which, of course, if we recall from the Ten Commandments, God frowns upon. God wants, perhaps even needs, the people to know that God is the only God. So God causes there to be a drought and then a famine in the land to prove to the people that Baal isn't strong enough to care for them. Baal, the god of storm and rain, can't cause there to be any moisture in Israel, yet the people still don't believe. They keep limping along, worshiping both Baal and God. Which is where Elijah comes in as a mid-course correction. Elijah then came near to all the people and said, "How long will you go limping with two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal, then follow him." The people did not answer him with a word. This postseason, I have limped along between believing in my team and doubting their ability to win. But at the end of the day, baseball is just a game. I'm more prone to limping along in more substantial ways. I think that we're more like the Israelites than we suspect that we are. Limping around, attempting to choose between two or more competing gods in our lives. Martin Luther, in his Large Catechism, says, "A god means that from which we are to expect all good, and to which we are to take refuge in all distress. So that to have a god is nothing else than to trust and believe him from the whole heart." In other words, a god is anything that lays claim to our lives. Anything in which we place our utmost trust, that which we turn to in our distress. For some of us, our God is perfectionism or workaholism, believing that we aren't able to be loved unless we're somehow perfect or always producing. For others of us, our God is money, doing whatever it is that we can to ensure that we have enough cash to save us from whatever unpleasantries might come our way. For others of us, maybe our God is fear. Fear that we won't have enough, won't be enough. Fear that we'll lose our power or our privilege. So we do whatever we can to ensure that none of that will happen. That we will not have to face our fear. The list goes on as to the other forces in our lives that pull us away from trusting God above all else. These things that lay claim to our lives in ways that we maybe don't even fully comprehend. And yet strike us so that we're limping along. On Sunday mornings, we come here to worship God, the God who claimed us in the waters of baptism and then claimed us again on the cross, giving us life out of death. The God who is unseen and yet has incredible power in this world. And then we go home in the afternoon or go to work on Monday morning and we worship other gods. I have limped along, and chances are you have too. The Israelites certainly did, but God wants to make sure that they don't limp any longer. So God challenges Baal to a match on Baal's home turf at Baal's own game. Elijah, the only prophet at Mount Carmel who belongs to God, challenges the 450 Baal prophets to a bull-burning contest. Let two bulls be given to us. Let them choose one bull for themselves, cut it into pieces, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by fire is indeed God. This is Baal's game. Remember, Baal is the prophet of storm and rain, which makes lightning a part of the gig. If there's a God who can light a bull on fire, it's got to be him. It's insane to think that Elijah will win this one. God is clearly the underdog in this match, which is exactly what God wants. Because if God's going to win the people back, God's got to have a big enough display so that there's no mistake that this God is more powerful than Baal. So the 450 prophets, Baal prophets, call upon Baal and dance around the bull. There's no answer from Baal. Then they cried aloud, as was their custom. They cut themselves with swords and lances until the blood gushed out over them. Nothing. They do everything that they can think to do, and there is no answer from Baal. After a respectable time, Elijah tells the people to come closer to him so they could see what he's doing. He repairs the altar to God that had been thrown down and then constructs another out of 12 stones. He digs a trench and prepares the wood for the fire. He cuts the bull up into pieces and then, after laying it on the altar, instructs the people to pour water all over the wood and the bull. Not just once, but twice, and then a third time. The wood and the bull are soaking wet, and there's enough water that the trench is full. All that water likely extinguished any flames of hope that anyone had for God to win this contest. But Elijah presses on. He says, "Answer me, O Lord, answer me, so that this people may know you, O Lord, our God, that you have turned their hearts back." Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, and the dust, and even licked up the water that was in the trench. When all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, "The Lord indeed is God. The Lord indeed is God." I know a little something about limping, but I also know a little something about a God who cannot stand to see us limp. A God who wants us to be able to walk, if not run, the race and run it well. A God who wants to put to rest any doubt that we may have about whom we can trust. We may not be able to see what God is up to at first, just like the Israelites didn't understand that the drought and the famine were the first sign. But God won't stop until we know that God is the only one who gives life, the one who does not strip it from us. That God is the only one who can give life out of death. The only one who can do the impossible, like lighting a wet, soggy mess of wood and a bull on fire. God will go to great lengths to win your heart back, no matter how long you have been limping along.